Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. The weather of recent days belies the fact that today is, in fact, the first weekday of meteorological winter. And while we are enjoying these unseasonably mild conditions, well, eventually we are likely to see freezing rain, snow, ice, slick road conditions, even the occasional snizzle. That's a sort of snowy drizzle for those of you keeping score at home. We here at WILL want you to be prepared for whatever old man winter may eventually bring our way. And so today on Focus, we seek to prepare you for winter with the help of meteorologist Ed Kieser. Ed, of course, used to be with us full time here at WILL. This winter, he is presenting reports about South American weather for us each week on Commodity Week. He's also currently a visiting lecturer in the Department of Journalism at the University of Illinois. And next week, he begins work as a meteorologist for American Electric Power in Columbus, Ohio. Ed Kieser, welcome back to Focus.
Oh, it's great to be here, Craig.
And Ed is here to take your weather questions, really anything meteorological in nature. And along the way, we will offer some important information about winter weather preparedness. Also, later in the hour, we will give you the chance to win some free stuff as we present a Focus Winter Weather Preparedness Quiz. First, though, to join our conversation with any and all weather questions, you can call us at 333-9455 or 1-800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or you can post questions to our Facebook or Twitter pages. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. So naturally, Ed, we're going to talk about winter weather.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful outside.
Well, you know, it's going to be a record today. The record high in Champaign-Urbana for today is 68 degrees in 1970. Already at Willard Airport, it's up to 65. I'm sure you have a Friends Plaza temperature there in your studio. You could.
I do. It's 64 degrees on Friends Plaza. And yesterday was also a high in Springfield. They tied the previous high, I believe.
Yes. Well, It rarely gets to 70 in the month of December in Champaign-Urbana. In fact, there's 2 days that I see a record high of 70, 71 on the 4th of December, 1998. I remember that well. And then also 70 degrees, the latest it's ever been 70 in the season, on December 15th of 1948. So if it hits 70 today, it's a rare, rare event indeed for the month of December. So not very winter-like. Some cooler air will be coming in a couple of days, as you might imagine. Temperatures this high do not last long.
They do not, and I guess maybe there's no better time in some ways to talk about preparing for more wintry weather, because you've got the day today to, you know, go out into the garage, make sure your car's, you know, stocked up with the right supplies, you know, and do whatever things you need to do to prepare for winter weather.
And really, you have all this week, and you're absolutely correct. You want to prepare for any season before it actually happens. So now is a good time to prepare for winter while it's nice outside to take care of things. Because as you said, this weather won't last. And I can remember many a year where we maybe had a very, very mild December, and then it turned much, much colder. And my experience in Champaign-Urbana, and this is not the case every year, but my experience seems to be that every year there's one month that tends to be the really cold, snowy month, and every year it's different. Some years it's December, other years it holds off until March. But it looks like so far, at least the first half of December, is not going to be the cold, snowy part of winter.
Is there any way to predict how cold it will get, or how many storms we'll get, or what will happen based off of the fact that it starts off milder?
Not really. Every year is a little bit different. Some winters of late, in the last couple of decades, have stayed pretty mild all the way through, but more often than not, if you have a really mild start to the winter, it doesn't last all the way through, and vice versa. We've had some years where it's been extremely cold in December, and then it turns mild after the first of the year, and we sometimes have a front-loaded winter. But again, my experience has been that in central Illinois, there tends to be one month that seems to really stand out, and some of the other months not so much. Of course, we have exceptions. You can go back to the late 70s where it would get cold in December and just stay bitterly cold all the way through, or you could look at last winter where it was rather mild throughout the winter. So every year is a little bit different in that regard.
How much snowfall do we usually receive on average in a year in the Midwest and in central Illinois specifically?
Well, in central Illinois, the official 30-year average for snowfall in Champaign-Urbana. This is based on statistics from 1981 through 2010, is 23.2 inches. And the average has been going down every decade, because every 10 years the average is recalculated. It used to be about 26.5 inches. But when you added in the first decade of the 21st century and took out the decade of the 1970s, that had a dramatic impact on the snowfall, because the first decade of the 21st century, we tended to have many winters with lower than average snowfall. And, of course, in the 1970s, we had several winters with high snowfall totals. So the average is 23 inches in the Champaign-Urbana area and across much of central Illinois, about 2 feet when you add up all the snowfalls together. Going south in southern Illinois, about 6 to 10 inches of snow would be more typical, and as you go farther north, you start to get into areas that get 30 and maybe even close to 40 inches near the Wisconsin border. But I do want to say, when it comes to snowfall, average is just that, and there's a high variability of snowfall from one year to the next, and that's been the case looking through more than a century of records. And, of course, you can look at the last 2 years. Last year, very, very low snowfall totals. It was a very mild winter, but the winter before that, there was that huge storm at the beginning of February of 2011. That one storm alone dumped a lot of snow on the area. So it usually comes down to a couple of storms, one or two storms that can really skew the numbers up, and of course some mild years can skew the numbers down.
And of course, if you want to look at things scientifically, when I first moved to Champaign-Urbana in the mid-90s, we had a really nasty winter. Then when I moved to Pennsylvania in 2002, there was a really nasty winter, and this is my first full winter back in Champaign. So just
okay.
Letting you know.
So, yeah, I had a feeling when you said looking at things scientifically.
That I wasn't,
okay,
actually.
Where's Craig going with this one?
You know me too well.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I guess we can't really predict precisely how much snow we'll receive in a given year.
No, and, you know, the Department of Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois every year has a snowfall prediction contest. All the students and some of the faculty there forecast how much snow they think there will be at the water survey for the season, and whoever comes closest without going over wins. I don't know what fabulous prize they win, probably something similar to what we're giving away later this hour. You know, you're looking at people that are really into weather and scientific experts, and their forecasts are all over the place every year. And oftentimes, if you forecast a total below average, you're going to win out, because the big years tend to be really big and skew the average up a little bit. So that 23.2 inches that's average for central Illinois, chances are, if you were to just look at statistics and nothing else, your seasonal snowfall total would come in below that in more years than not. But there would be a couple of years where it comes in way above that. So take that for what it's worth. But every year is different, and yes, it is really difficult to predict exactly how much is going to fall. In fact, almost impossible.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we're discussing winter weather with meteorologist Ed Kieser. But we welcome any and all questions relating to the weather at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. Or you can email your question or comment to will-talk@illinois.edu. And we'll go first this morning to Eric in Urbana. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. Two winters ago, we had, 43 inches of snow, so that kind of boosted the average. But I've got a couple of things I'd like you to reply to. One, your opinion of global warming. And two, last winter was the first winter I remember that we didn't go below zero. We got down to a single digit. The wind chill was below zero for a few days. But that seems pretty strange that we didn't go below winter. So would you comment on that and your opinion of global warming?
All right. Thanks for the call.
Well, might as well get that first question out of the way, because I knew it would come up.
Right.
I'll first say I'm not an expert on global warming, climate change, whatever you want to call it. I like to call it climate change because global warming is talking about the average temperature at the surface of the Earth and the fact that the average temperature is rising, which it has been over the last century plus. Now, that doesn't mean every year the average temperature of the Earth is higher than the previous year. You just have to look at the long-term trend. And in fact, we've had a few years recently in the past decade where it dropped a little bit from some of the really high values of the late 90s. But the general trend has been up. So global warming is taking place. But it's a gradual thing, and it does not mean that every place on Earth is warming up. So that's why I like to call it climate change, because there's different changes in climate for different areas of the world. So in terms of, is there global warming, is there climate change? Yes, there is. Now, the bigger question is, what are the causes of that, and how much of each of the causes is contributing to the climate change? And that's a harder question to answer. I do believe that it's a combination of natural phenomena and also human-induced phenomena. And there's a lot more that can be said about that. And, you know, I'm one that likes to do reading on what those that study this are saying, and leave it at that for right now, because I'm not the expert on the topic. But the Earth is definitely warming. The only other thing I'll say, because I know there will be a lot of people that want to talk about that, the one thing I've always said is that some of the human activities that lead to climate change and the warming of the average temperature of the Earth, some believe that humans have a great impact on that, and others do not. But what I will say is those things that lead to having an impact on that, even if you don't think that it really does, those same activities are also what contribute to polluting of the atmosphere. So it's always been my feeling that we should, as a society, always be trying to look for new ways to do things in a cleaner fashion, because you can accomplish more than, take care of more than one issue with doing that. Now, having said that, I know you get into the politics and the economy and all that, and I just hope as we go through time we can find ways that clean up the atmosphere and also help the economy at the same time, and they don't have to be mutually exclusive, which unfortunately the political landscape over the last couple of decades, I feel, in this issue as well as many others, has become so toxic that it's hard for people to even talk about it. And that's also why, not being an expert, I don't like to talk about it too much, because beyond that, you know, my studies are more on shorter-term weather than the longer-term climate. So hopefully that answers much of that, and we can move on and talk about winter weather.
And he was asking about
below zero.
Yeah.
You know, I have to go back to see if there's ever been a winter like that. I'm trying to remember. There might have been one or two in the past, but it's certainly highly, highly unusual to not have the temperature drop to below zero Fahrenheit in Champaign-Urbana. Highly unusual. I think it's happened once or twice before since records began in 1888. And I don't know if the state climatologist Jim Angel is listening. He probably knows the exact answer to that. I could look it up, but I don't want to veer too much from what I'm doing here on the air right now. But I will say that we've had a couple other mild winters in the past where I thought that might happen, and then we get that one below zero morning, and I don't recall it happening recently until this past year. So as the listener noted, that is very, very unusual.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. My guest is meteorologist Ed Kieser, and we are discussing what you can do to prepare yourself for winter weather on this first weekday of meteorological winter. I know it doesn't feel like it if you step outside. Very mild conditions today, but there will likely be some periods of snow and sleet and ice and wind and other inclement weather in the months to come, and we want you to be ready for it. We also welcome any other questions or comments you may have about the weather for Ed. You can call us at 333-9455. Or if you're outside the 217 area code, you can call us at 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. or post your question on WILL's Facebook page, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is Will Public Media. And we'll go next to Paul in Champaign County. Good morning, Paul.
Hi there. I wanted to ask about ice storms, and it seems to me that you kind of have to look at long-term climate change to maybe have something to say about frequencies of ice storms, because if it's going to be warmer, I don't know exactly how freezing rain and ice storms work together. There's sometimes it's cold above, and so anything about that, but I just have to ask about this. If you've seen this study about atmospheric rivers, at least get the word out there, arc storms, people have been looking into megastorms for a while. Sandy has certainly heightened that. But there's a phenomenon that happened in 1862 on the West Coast where they sort of had biblical 40 days and 40 nights of rain, and people are worried that this is a 100-year frequency, and with warmer water in the Pacific, it actually, this phenomenon might happen more often. So I don't know if you saw that recent study that just came out. It's on the blogosphere, so I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right, thanks.
I did not see the specific study he's referring to, but of course we could talk a little bit about Sandy in a few moments. But he first brought up ice storms, and the one thing I do want to say about climate change, again, it's gradual, and even if the global temperature, average temperature, starts to warm at a faster rate, which could lead to some problems, I think the one thing we got to keep in perspective is that there will still be variations in weather. Every year will be different. There won't be 2 years exactly the same. There will be periods of cold weather and periods of warm weather, just as there are now, because of just how everything moves around and tries to balance out. The equatorial areas are still going to be much warmer than the polar areas. So when we look at climate change, we're looking at a larger issue over a longer period of time. Now, part of that may be that we start to see a higher frequency of some storms and maybe some storms of greater intensity, but at the same time, that doesn't mean we're going to suddenly have storms all the time. And when it comes down to things like ice storms, a lot has to come together on a much smaller scale than a global scale. So ice storms will still likely occur here for the rest of our lifetimes, at least.
Well, let me ask it, what are the conditions that need to be in place for an ice storm to occur versus snowfall or some other form of precipitation? What do you need to have happening in the atmosphere?
Okay, and I'm going to talk from a central Illinois perspective, and you can kind of adjust things elsewhere. And the ice storm belt actually extends oftentimes from around northern Texas and Oklahoma and that part of the country northeastward on through Illinois and then on up sometimes into the St. Lawrence Valley up in Quebec. Several years ago, there was a massive ice storm. Around central Illinois, at any one given place, usually once every decade to decade and a half, there's a major ice storm. And sometimes there will be more ice storms than that overall. It's just the band of ice is usually in a very narrow, maybe 40, 50-mile wide band, extending generally west to east or southwest to northeast across the area. And the reason that it's kind of a small area is the temperature profile in the lowest 2 miles of the atmosphere has to be precisely where you have temperatures just below freezing near the ground level, but not far above the ground, say 1,000 feet or a little more above, it's above freezing. So what you have is rain falling, and then as it gets near the ground, it enters this very shallow below freezing layer. But it's shallow enough that the raindrops don't actually freeze into ice pellets or anything like that. It's rain falling, but when it strikes the surface of the ground, which is below freezing, everything just freezes up. The conditions for that, usually you have a frontal system, a stationary front that would be located to our south, separating very warm air at the surface from colder air to the north. And you usually have a strong Canadian high-pressure system to the north, where the clockwise flow around that high at the surface is bringing in a very shallow layer of cold air. So temperatures have to just be below freezing right near the ground and above freezing right above the ground, and it doesn't happen very often. And during the winter, it may happen for a short time on several occasions. But to get that for, say, a prolonged period, 12, 18, 24 hours or more, the front to the south has to be just sitting there. The high has to be strong to the north. You have to be in the zone where it is raining. And so that's why it doesn't happen very often. You'd have to have a bunch of things come together at the same time. Of course, that's happened on several occasions in central Illinois, 1967, 1978, 1990, and then back in the middle of the last decade to the west of Champaign-Urbana around Decatur and Springfield, there was a major ice storm as well. So it happens in any given location maybe once every decade, decade and a half on average. But with all weather events, there's not a regular cycle either. You could have two of them in a four-year period, or you could go a couple decades without one.
How many different forms of frozen precipitation are there?
Well, the main ones are snow, sleet, which is ice pellets, freezing rain, and also there's hail, which is not really a winter form of precipitation. That forms high up in thunderstorm clouds, but that's a frozen type of precipitation. But then you could break it down further. There's ice pellets, snow pellets, ice needles. You mentioned snizzle. That's not an official term, but that's one that I like to use.
I like it too.
Yeah, snizzle is the snow version of drizzle. Drizzle is usually just very tiny little droplets falling out of the sky. So the frozen version of that would be freezing drizzle. So freezing rain is actual raindrops falling. If it's drizzling and it's below freezing at the ground level, that would be freezing drizzle. And freezing drizzle really can cause a lot of problems because you usually don't detect that on radar. It doesn't usually accumulate to a measurable amount per se, but it still over time can add up and make roads slippery and cause a real mess. Not your ice storm type of mess where power lines come crashing down, but enough that you could really have some slick spots on sidewalks and roadways. So freezing drizzle is one of those things that occurs that is really a nuisance that sometimes is very hard to detect.
Let's take another call. We have Susan on the line from Urbana. Hi, Susan.
Hi. We were in Ohio several weeks before the election, and I was listening to the area public radio in the morning, and I heard a voice, and I thought, talking about the weather, and I thought, is that Ed Kieser? Yes, it is Ed Kieser. And sure enough, they said that it was you, that you were a consulting meteorologist, maybe? I forget what the title that they gave you. And at one point, you were talking about Sandy developing.
Right.
And I'm wondering how far ahead of time you called that.
Well, what you heard, you probably heard me on a station that airs the program Here and Now, which is on some NPR stations out of WBUR in Boston. I did a couple of interviews with them right about the time Sandy hit, I think on the Friday before and the Monday that it was coming in. And that storm actually was well predicted. It made landfall, as I recall, on a Monday evening. And on Friday, just about everybody figured it was going to move northeastward up the East Coast and then make a sudden turn toward the northwest or west-northwest in toward New Jersey. And that's an extraordinary path for a storm to take. I've never seen that happen in my career. And the computer models were showing it. The National Hurricane Center's official forecast on Friday started to show that as the forecast, and that's indeed what happened. So kudos to those that specialize in the hurricane tracking, forecast tracking, because hurricanes are often very difficult to forecast for many days in advance. And, of course, a storm taking a turn like that being very unusual, the more lead time you can get on that, the better, because it affected a major population area. And as we know, even with the good forecast, there's still, to this day and for days and months and years to come, there's going to be a major cleanup effort because it was just an astounding storm for those in New Jersey and around the New York City area and southern parts of New England. Some of the computer models from Europe were actually indicating that track about a week ahead of time. The U.S. models didn't really pick up on it until late in the week, but it was a well-forecast storm.
There was a program on PBS about Sandy, and it did say that the European model predicted it much farther ahead of time. And I know that you often talk about the different computer models, and I really appreciate what you do, and we miss having you on the air locally. And I was also just amazed at how far that storm reached, because it affected even, when we felt it in north central Ohio, it caused damage in along the lakeshore. And
it did, because the counterclockwise flow around that storm had the winds across the Great Lakes region out of the north, so right along the Lake Erie shoreline, and also even as far west as Lake Michigan, there were some impacts at the south end of Lake Michigan in northwest Indiana as well, with high water levels and very strong winds. So, yeah, it had far-reaching impact, more so than your typical hurricane, because it became what we call a hybrid storm. We had a middle-latitude cyclonic storm, the typical low-pressure system that moves across the U.S., moving in from the west, and it kind of combined with Sandy in such a way that normally doesn't take place. So it was one of those situations where things came together in such a way that we had an unusual circumstance with Sandy. And as a result, the impact of Sandy was in a much larger area than usual. Hurricanes are huge, but not that big.
So what is your new job going to be?
I am starting a job next Monday with American Electric Power in Columbus, Ohio, and I'll be one of three meteorologists there. They have a meteorologist retiring, so I'll be taking his place and doing forecasting for that power company, which has transmission lines and such over an 11-state area from Texas to Virginia and up into Ohio and even parts of northwest Indiana and southwest lower Michigan. So there'll be a variety of things, looking at long-range forecasting for trying to determine energy usage into the future, but also keeping track of the severe weather to make sure that crews are in place ahead of time, such as with the storms, the scope of Sandy. So I'll be not doing broadcasting in that job, but I'll be doing a lot of meteorology.
Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks very much for the call. And Ed, I guess I should also point out that you are continuing to do some work with us every week on Commodity Week through the winter months.
Yeah, it's fun to be back doing that. I'm doing the South American forecast here on into the middle part of March. So, yep, be making a brief appearance once a week, and it'll be fun. So we get to do a little broadcasting still.
That's right. Good. We have an email from a different Susan asking, I'm interested in purchasing a NOAA weather radio. There are many options available. Do you suggest any features to look for certain manufacturers?
Well, I think the thing with a NOAA weather radio is you want a tone alert, so you're alerted if there's severe weather, especially in the middle of the night. And for that reason, I would get one with what's called the specific area message encoding, or SAME, so that you can program your county. Maybe you want to program the one county to your west as well. So if you're in Champaign, Urbana, you'd certainly want Champaign County programmed into your radio. And perhaps you want Piatt County. It's up to you. That way you're not being awakened every time there's a warning or watch issued within a 9 or 10 county area that the local weather radio station serves. So that's one feature I really look for, is having one that has that same technology, the tone alert with the programmable county, so you can customize it to where you live. And they'll tell you how to program it. All across the country, every county has a code number, and they can show you where to find that online so you can program your county. And that way, if you move to, you can reprogram your radio to where you move to. But to me, that's the most important feature to get on a NOAA weather radio. Probably when it's most valuable to you is when you're asleep. And, of course, sometimes you're not happy when it wakes you up, but, you know, you'll be happy if it wakes you up and you take shelter and your house gets blown away.
Speaking of those alerts, what is the difference between a winter weather advisory, a winter storm watch, and a winter storm warning?
Well, the degree of severity of the weather. Winter weather advisories are the least urgent, and they're usually issued a day or two in advance, and they could be issued for anything from sleet or snow to maybe icing, some freezing rain. And along with some of that, maybe it's just some blowing or drifting snow. And they're mainly issued if the National Weather Service feels that there's going to be significant travel problems or delays, and you would probably need to spend a little more time traveling. Now, depending on where you are in the country, the criteria used for issuing a winter weather advisory is different. For central Illinois, from the National Weather Service in Lincoln, usually if there's going to be snowfall 2 to 5 inches anticipated, they'll issue the winter weather advisory. Or if there's going to be icing, but they think the thickness of the ice is going to be less than a quarter inch thick. So that's the advisory. A watch means a severe winter storm, severe winter weather is possible in the next 1 to 3 days. It's not definitive yet on the track or intensity of the storm, so that just means watch out. Start to prepare for the storm ahead of time while the weather's still good.
Well, while you mentioned that, what ways should we prepare for a winter storm?
Well, you want to, well, for one thing, you want to maybe adjust your travel plans. That's one thing. And think about if you have travel plans in the next few days, think about do you need to be someplace else before the storm hits, and you might want to go early. Or if it, you know, sometimes if you're taking a big trip and it looks like it's a major storm, airlines will let you adjust your itinerary if it looks like it's going to be a storm that's going to majorly impact the airline. So, you know, you might want to be proactive and adjust your flights before everybody else does, so you have the best options coming out of the storm. You also obviously want to stock up on food and other things you need for your house for several days in case you end up stranded during a winter storm. So things like that are things you want to do during a watch. So you want to make sure you have your food, including some food in case the power goes out. That would be especially true for high winds and ice storms in the wintertime. And your water and your typical supplies. Make sure you have a good supply of medicines if you're on prescription medication so that you don't run out and it's at a time when you can't get to the pharmacy. So things like that. You just want to prepare ahead of time during a winter watch, a winter storm watch. Because when a warning's issued, that means the winter storm will hit within the next day or so, and then the warning will continue during the storm. And that's usually heavier snow, over 5 inches, or ice that's a quarter inch or more, and you could have significant blowing and drifting snow as well.
Typically, what's worse, a lot of blowing and drifting snow, or just a lot of snow coming down?
I think the blowing and drifting snow is a lot worse, and sometimes in central Illinois, that's the thing that's least considered. I think a lot of people just worry about how many inches are we going to get? You know, that was a question I'd always get is how many inches, 3, 4, and I want to pin you down on that. And snowfall forecasting is very difficult. I try my best to keep the range as small as possible and be as precise as possible on that. But here's the thing. You could get 4 inches of snow, and that, of course, is going to make roads slippery, and the plows and salt trucks are going to have to go out and clear off the roads, and you got to slow down. But if there's no wind with 4 inches of snow, that can usually be dealt with pretty easily. On the other hand, I've seen cases of 1 inch of snow, just 1 inch, and the winds are blowing up. A lot of times when an Alberta Clipper comes through, that's this type of storm that produces just a powdery light snow. But if you have a powdery light snow and a lot of wind, that could cause whiteout conditions in rural areas, and it's impossible to see, and you know, the snow starts drifting across the road. So you'll have areas where the road's clear, and then all of a sudden you hit a big drift that can throw your car around. So I say especially in central Illinois and the Midwest, you really have to watch out for the wind. You want to know what the wind forecast is with snow. I would take 4 inches of snow with no wind over 1 inch of snow and lots of wind any time when it comes to traveling.
Tell you what, Ed, let's take one more phone call, and then we can take a quick break and get into our quiz and give
sure.
away some prizes. Let's go next to Mike in Aurora. Good morning, Mike.
Morning.
Hi.
Ed, nice to hear you back on WIL again.
It's good to be here.
I know that long-term it's difficult to predict, but I was just kind of curious what your thoughts are for this coming spring, being it's so bad, we're so dry, you know, and I was just wondering if what your thoughts are for this spring and possibly into the summer.
Well, I do have some concerns. Again, as you noted, it is very hard to make a long-range prediction. First off, I doubt, and, you know, I'm not saying this with 100% degree of certainty. I doubt that the drought that we had this past summer in central Illinois will be repeated. That was extraordinary. And the likelihood of that is not great. But having said that, I am still worried about the dryness. It's still very, very dry to the west. I think the farther west one travels in the Midwest and into the plains, the greater concern I have with this next season coming up. The drought is extreme right now across the plains, and that area is, we see no signs yet of that changing. And until there's a significant weather pattern change to bring a lot of moisture in, that's going to be a problem, because there tends to be droughts feed on themselves once the ground is dry. It's much harder to gain moisture when a little weather system comes by to produce precipitation. Conversely, and we've seen that many times in the last decade, when there's a lot of moisture out in the field, you know, extra ponds, you know, the lakes and rivers above their banks, you tend to get more rain, because when a little weather system comes through, a lot more moisture is available for that storm system to work with. So flooding sometimes feeds on itself, and the same thing with dry weather. Once it's dry, it's harder to get away from being dry. In the end, all droughts end. In the end, all flooding situations end, but that usually requires a major shift in the weather pattern, and that could happen in the spring into summer because it's so far out. But based on no specific information on that right now, you have to be concerned with the areas that are most dry. And so going into next season, I'm a little more hopeful for the eastern Midwest than the western Midwest in terms of precipitation, and but dryness still remains a concern. But having said that, you know, it's just extraordinary. The growing season of 2011 was extremely wet, and we went from one extreme to the other with the growing season of 2012 being extremely dry. So sometimes things do change very dramatically, and those are the types of changes that are not usually forecast well in advance.
All right, our phone lines are not clear, so why don't we get rolling on the quiz? I know
sure.
We're also due to take a short break, and we'll do that in a moment. But first, I want to give you the opportunity, if you would like to answer a quiz question, a winter weather preparedness quiz question, and win a prize, all you have to do is call us at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. That's 333-WILL or 800-222-WILL. We'll ask you one question. Honestly, I think these questions are probably pretty easy. Would you agree, Ed?
Probably, yeah.
Probably. So a chance to win a prize suitable for stocking stuffing. Give us a call right now, and we'll get you set up on the line. 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. And we are overdue to take a short break. Let's do that. This is Focus.
Irish writer Colm Tobin, author of the bestseller Brooklyn, has a new novel, which imagines Mary remembering her son Jesus 20 years after his crucifixion. On the next Fresh Air, we'll talk with Colm Tobin about his book, Growing Up Catholic in Ireland, Being Gay, and Writing About What's Left Unsaid. Join us.
Weekdays at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. on AM 580.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we are participating now in a Focus Winter Weather Preparedness Quiz with meteorologist Ed Kieser. Ed, you can credit Kyle Mabry for the music. Thought you'd enjoy hearing that. This is an opportunity for you to call in, answer a question correctly, and win a prize from the deepest, darkest recesses of the WILL Thank You Gift Closet. The phone numbers to call to participate are 333-WILL or toll-free 800-222-WILL. And we will get started with Bruce. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Yes. Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning. Ed, did you want to ask these questions? You want me to dive into them?
Well, you have them. You have them in order. You can ask the question.
Okay.
Comment on them. How's that?
That sounds like a good idea. Okay. All right. Here's our first winter preparedness quiz question for you, Bruce.
Yes, sir.
According to the National Weather Service wind chill data, if the outside temperature is 15 degrees Fahrenheit and the wind is blowing steadily at 35 miles per hour, how cold does it feel? And here are your choices. 10 degrees Fahrenheit, 20 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 7 degrees Fahrenheit, or 15 degrees Celsius.
I'll go with minus 7.
And you, sir, are correct.
Oh, thank you.
Congratulations. Your prize.
By the way, 15 Celsius is 59 Fahrenheit, so that's
okay.
Pretty warm.
Yeah, that would be very warm. All right, your prize is we have a copy of Red Green's How to Do Everything from the Man Who Should Know, a completely exhaustive guide to do-it-yourself and self-help. I've thumbed through this, and all of the photos, it seems everything that he repairs involves, of course, duct tape. So hang on the line, Bruce, and we're going to take
you.
Down some information from you, and we'll send that along. All right?
Thanks so much.
All right. Happy meteorological winter. Let's go next to Bill. Bill, welcome to the program. Bill, are you with us?
Yes, yes. You know, I am curious, what forms jet streams? What are the functions that create jet streams? And I'll listen on the radio.
Oh, okay. All right. You just wanted to ask the question.
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, the jet stream is a fast-moving river of air at the level of the tropopause, which is approximately about 8 miles up in the atmosphere. And in the wintertime, there's often two jet streams, the polar front jet, which separates polar air to the north, and the not-as-cold air over the rest of the U.S. And then in the winter, there's the added subtropical jet that separates the cooler air over the U.S. from the truly tropical air to the south. And what causes jet streams is basically the difference in temperature from it being very warm in the tropics and very cold at the poles. And as that's the what causes the jet streams are stronger in the wintertime when there's that bigger contrast, because the tropical areas are always warm. The polar areas are much colder during the six-month night of winter. So that's what causes the jet streams. It's, they flow in a wavy west-to-east fashion. You have them in both the northern and southern hemisphere, but the northern hemisphere jet stream is a bit stronger as there's more contrast in weather with more land over the northern hemisphere. But it's colder toward the poles, so that's why you have the westerly winds increasing with height, being strongest up at the jet stream level of the tropopause, top of the troposphere.
All right. Let's go next to Ernie. Ernie, you want to participate in our quiz?
Oh, yeah. Well, like Bill, I had a question about,
okay.
Did he address those whirling things that came in off the prairie, maybe 8 years ago? I'm on my bicycle north of Charleston, so I might have missed some of it, but we had a sort of a phenomenon.
I didn't talk. Are you talking about the snow rollers?
Yeah, yeah. And I think friends of yours, Pam and Tom Fries, had seen them. I don't know if they occurred up by you guys or
yes.
If it was down here.
I do recall that. I don't recall the exact year. I remember Jay Pierce giving us some pictures, and we showed them on Your Weather on WILL-TV.
Yeah, extremely
in the late 90s.
I had never seen anything like it.
Well, it was one of those things where you had to have the wind a certain way, and the consistency of the snow had to be such that they would roll. Because if the snow was too dry, you wouldn't have any rolling. If it was too wet, the snow wouldn't move either. So it was an unusual phenomenon where the snow.
Like you said, it was like 1 inch. I mean, more
yeah.
things were happening with 1 inch than 4 inches, which was interesting. Anyway, we all miss you, as that woman said.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And you know what?
It's good
if
for
I find.
You to know you have groupies, you know.
Wow.
Well, Ernie, since you're such a groupie, you want to take a crack at our quiz?
Yeah, let's see. I'm not really good at it, but
well, we'll see what happens. All right, here's your question. According to National Weather Service wind chill data, if you're exposed to 35-mile-an-hour winds and it's 20 degrees below zero Fahrenheit, how long before that exposure can lead to frostbite? A, 1 hour, B, 30 minutes, C, 15 minutes, or D, 5 minutes?
I think I'd go with the 5 minutes.
You are correct, sir.
That is correct.
Wow, because it's immediate. It's like jumping into a frozen river and thinking you can get out.
Ernie, I'm going to send you a copy of the Book of Vice, Very Naughty Things and How to Do Them, from Wait, Don't Tell Me's Peter Sagal. All right?
Oh, we love it. Okay. Well,
all right.
And be sure Ed knows how much he's missed around here. Okay.
All right. Hold on
thank
the line.
You.
We're going to take down some information from you.
Thanks so much. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
All right, you too.
You mentioned Peter Sagal. I had the pleasure of seeing the taping of Wait, Don't Tell Me in Cleveland back in the late spring, early summer. That was a blast.
Oh, yeah.
It was a blast.
I've never had the pleasure. I would love to go to
it's a great live show.
Yeah.
As well as a radio show. Of course, the live show goes a little longer. You can tell there's some editing to some of the answers because the answers get a little long there. But
I also imagine there are probably some things that they say that maybe shouldn't end up on the radio. But
not as much
know.
As you think.
No?
They're actually pretty good mm-hmm. about... but there's probably... there are a couple things maybe.
All right. Let's go next to Richard. Richard, would you like to participate in our quiz?
Yeah.
All right. Here's your question. Which of the following can hypothermia and frostbite lead to? A, loss of fingers and toes. B, kidney, pancreas, or liver damage. C, death. Or D, all of the above.
I'd say D.
And you would be correct, sir. All of the above.
All right.
You know, Craig, you sounded like one of those pharmaceutical ads that you hear on television. They tell you how great it is, except it could cause, and then... Read those things, Aaron.
All right. Let's see what I've got from the thank you gift closet here for Richard. Ah, I have the Pocket Guide to Soybean Diseases in the Midwestern U.S.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to send that along to you. Hang on the line. We're going to take down some information.
I hope he's into farming.
Yeah, I hope so, too. Let's go next to Yvonne. Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Would you like
Hi, Ed.
Hi.
Would you like to take a crack at the quiz?
Well, actually, I have just one really general question, and
okay.
I know Ed has answered this before, but I love it when he can lay some myths to rest.
Okay.
Is there any insect, plant, or animal that can predict a hard winter?
I don't know if I've actually answered that question that way. I don't know of any plant or animal. I'll just say I don't know of any insect, plant, or animal that's good at doing that all the time. Because if there was, we'd all know about it. The woolly worms.
Every year around this time, everybody starts with the woolly worms, the acorns, whatever.
And the persimmon. Seeds,
right.
All that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot that one.
Yeah, if you look at the woolly worms enough, if you find enough of them, I've found that oftentimes you'll find different coats on the different woolly worms. So a lot of it depends on the sample, I guess, people bring in. You know, some will have the more of their coat being dark, which is indicative of a hard winter. But I usually, when I've seen them, of different varieties. I also know that... some even use the wrong woolly worm, which are there's some type of similar species that's out earlier in the fall than the actual woolly bear caterpillars. And woolly bear caterpillars are the ones that people like to make the weather forecast off of. But, again, I'll just go to it. All that stuff is fun, but if any of those things were actually truly accurate all of the time, or if anybody was truly accurate all of the time with the winter or seasonal forecast, we'd all know who they are because you'd look to that. Everybody would look to that. Okay, there's your definitive answer. And that's what I like to say to people. Do you know anybody that actually has that definitive answer all the time? Is there somebody that everybody looks to because they just know it? Or is there a certain thing that everybody looks to?
And,
nope.
But you, Ed, always were right in the short term.
All right, Yvonne.
I relied on you so heavily.
Oh, that's nice.
I wouldn't say always. I try to be more accurate than the others, but, you know, all of us are make mistakes in weather. Nobody's perfect at it.
Yvonne, while we have you on the line, would you like to try and answer a question?
Oh, okay.
All right, here's your question. What part of the body of your body is most susceptible to heat loss? A, your hands. B, your toes. C, your back. Or D, your head?
Your head.
Your head is correct. And I'm going to send you, we've got Pat Boone, the Gold Collection CD, all right?
Oh, thanks!
All right, hang on the line. We're going to take down some information from you.
All right, well, that was a nice call. And, of course, wear a hat when it's cold out.
That's right.
That's a lesson from that question.
All right, I think we've got time for one more. Alan is on the line. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Welcome back, Ed. We really miss you.
We've got a question for you, if you're all set, Alan.
Okay, I just wanted to ask Ed if he believes in Hootie Hoo Day.
All right, we'll let Ed ponder that for a second. Let me ask you this question, all right?
Okay.
Which of the following cities receives more snowfall during the winter? A, Chicago, Illinois. B, Miami, Florida. C, Flagstaff, Arizona. Or D, Anaheim, California.
Chicago, A?
Actually, it's Flagstaff, Arizona.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. More snow falls during the winter in Flagstaff than in Chicago. This is due to the elevation in Flagstaff. They get about 100 inches of snow each year. Chicago gets about 38.5 inches each year.
I guess the folks in Flagstaff, a month before the vernal equinox, have to go out and say hootie-hoo, huh?
Well, you know what? There are no losers in this quiz. So, Alan, I'm going to send you a Michael Bolton One World, One Love CD. So hang on the line. We're going to take down some information from you, all right?
That's winning.
Well, that's not getting the question, the answer right. Hey, Ed, I'm afraid we are just out of time.
Yeah, well.
It went fast.
It went very fast. If I have a quick moment to just one last thing, is just when we talk about ice, make sure that no matter what you're driving, if there's an ice storm, just be very careful. I call ice the great equalizer. I notice a lot of SUVs and big vehicles in the median during ice because heavier vehicles usually do better in snow. The four-wheel drives do better in snow. But once you get a sheet of ice out there, nothing does really well. So keep that in mind when you're traveling. When the temperature is close to freezing and it's raining, pay close attention to the roadways.
Meteorologist Ed Kieser, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure. It was fun.
Today's program was produced by Travis Stanzel. Other members of our focus team are Pam Dempsey, Kimberly Cronick, and Jim Meadows. Kyle Mabry's our technical director. He handled your calls today. I'm Craig Cohen. Thanks for joining us.